And welcome to another edition of Basketball. I'm Sean Woodley.
And I'm Katie Heindel.
And today's show is brought to you by Rasheed Wallace, who on this day in 2004 was part of a playoff loss by the Detroit Pistons to the New Jersey Nets, 94-79 in a postseason game. The Pistons went on to win this series, but this was not a pleasant game for our boy Rasheed Wallace. Just 6 points on 1-of-5 shooting. One of the weirder box scores I've ever seen. Only one player on this Pistons team had double-digit points, and it was Rip Hamilton, who had 30. The next highest scorer on the team was a tie between Mehmet Okur and Tayshaun Prince for 8 points, as Jason Kidd, Richard Jefferson, and Kenyon Martin took down the Detroit Pistons. Katie, he didn't lose to the Lakers. That's nice. I don't really have a ton of thoughts on Rasheed Wallace basketball-wise right now. I do have to ask you, though, a Rasheed Wallace question related to the weather, Katie. It's hot out today. It's going up to like 25 degrees here in the fair town of Hamilton, Ontario. I'm not sure what the deal is over there in Toronto, but I'm assuming slightly cooler because it's always a little bit warmer here in this tropical climb down in Hamilton. But short season, Katie. Rasheed Wallace, shorts. You are the inventor of shorts to clothing, of course. Do you have any takes on Rasheed Wallace as a shorts man? Obviously, he wore them every day as an NBA player. But you know, out in the wild, have you seen any great Rasheed Wallace shorts pictures? Do you think it's time to bust out the shorts here on May 11th because of the weather? I'm just curious about your Rasheed Wallace and shorts related things. They're not really tied together, but it's that time of year, Katie.
That's true. It is. I was trying to find what the high was going up to today, so I could spite you.
I think Toronto.
It says 23. It says 23, but we'll see what it gets to. It might creep past that. I often wonder if I feel like most basketball players get used to wearing shorts. As you said, they wear them for work every single day that they play. So I feel like, you know, I've seen Rasheed. I think I've seen him wear some kind of utilitarian, like I want to say like a cargo short, you know?
Yeah.
Something like that. He's a walker, like a hiker, as we know, and I'm sure he's wearing shorts. Probably, again, some type of like basketball short, you know, when he's out there doing that. And yeah, I think I was going to make the formal announcement a little later today, but because I am going on vacation, I was going to say, you know, people should, if you feel like wearing shorts, you have the green light from me. It's a little bit earlier than I normally would. It's a little earlier than you normally would have, but I don't, you know, I feel like the weather is just going to get warmer and people... I feel like people really need this, so let your legs out.
Yeah, it was, as you noted this morning on Twitter, it's a very short spring season for most people. It's really kind of come up on people fast, this warm weather. I just found a picture. I searched Rasheed Wallace shorts. Of course, Rasheed Wallace smile is our typical go-to Google image search on this year podcast. But I just searched Rasheed Wallace shorts. And if you scroll down, there's a Business Insider article called Rasheed Wallace's Best Knicks Moments. And okay. In this video, he is wearing, I think, capri pants. They might be like Manute Bol shorts. I'm not sure. I just sent you the link to it, Katie. I need you to define whether these are pants, shorts, capri, something in between, maybe an unbeforeseen article of clothing that we've never really classified before that Sheed is wearing in these photos from a Knicks practice, presumably back in like 2012 or whenever he played for the team.
Okay. Page is loading.
Cool.
Geez, a lot of ads, Business Insider.
Well, yeah, that's the way they go.
It's a video? Oh, I don't. Is it a video? I'm seeing shorts. I'm seeing. Dude, there's. I can't even. What number is it? This is really going slow.
The main image at the top of the page does show him under the basket holding the bottom of the net with the net with the shorts on. Again, I'm not sure if we'd classify these as shorts or capris.
Then there's some that are down later, and they think they say capris. The caption says capris.
Okay.
But.
Yeah.
Oh, Seth Rosenthal took that picture. I should ask Seth.
Oh, that's fun. Shout out Seth.
Yeah, I'm looking. You know what they look like? They look like, because of the way they're bunched at the bottom and like it's a blurry photo. So again, I'll try and ask Seth if he remembers back this far. But It looks like there's a tie or something that you would tie the bottom up so they're not just hanging straight.
Like he's done himself like his own little personal hand job?
Or sometimes they have like an elastic with like a toggle.
Right, right.
That's what it might. That's what it looks like to me.
Fascinating stuff. We'll have to share this image from our main account and get the people to vote on whether they're shorts, capris, or something in between. Maybe they're just called sheeds. Maybe they have it's a new article of clothing, and I'm going to walk around all summer long, the summer of sheeds, with these sort of half-pant, half-short things. They don't quite look to me, you know, like the picture of TJ Ford with the hilariously long shorts. They don't seem as, like, boxy and sort of, I think, forgiving in the front part of them. We're seeing them from the back, but you know what I mean? Like, they look more like they're intended to be pants, but they're, in fact, short pants as opposed to long shorts. But that is a cake song that I'm sure will come out at some point in the future. Katie, from the week that we just had, before we get into today's show, which we're going to talk about the playoffs and honestly why I kind of am hating the playoffs right now and I'm bummed out about it, we're going to dig into that. And then we have a fun little segment we're trying out this week to try to do a little bit of conflict resolution because of all the conflict that is going on in the NBA. But I do have to say, Katie, my week has been dominated by one thing, and that is an earworm. You ever get an earworm, Katie, that just kind of sticks with you for a long time? And I guess the worst version of this is, do you get a good song stuck as an earworm to the point that you start to resent that good song?
No, I only ever get bad or weird songs stuck right in my head. Never good ones that I like.
So I'm currently struggling. Last week, we were binging through the newest season of RuPaul's Drag Race right now. And for one of the lip sync for your lives in one of the recent episodes, they have to lip sync to Radio by Beyonce, which is a fucking fantastic song. However, ever since it happened, that song has been stuck in my head on loop and I can't get it out. And I'm worried I'm at risk of not liking Radio by Beyonce anymore, which is a problem because that song rules, Katie. What do I do here?
Isn't the rule to listen to the song and to like get rid of it?
I've done it a lot and it just won't go away.
Oh, then I don't know. Then you probably have to wait until another song gets stuck in your head.
Fair enough. I'm looking for suggestions. If anyone has a good replacement earworm, preferably a bad song that I don't mind hating, because again, I love Radio by Beyonce. It's literally on my wedding DJ playlist, but it's just been embedded in there for a little while, and I'm having some trouble. Katie, how was your week? Was it also dominated by earworms, or was it something else going on for you?
No, mine was dominated by, as you know, the pipes in the house being dug up, but today's the first day that I guess the pipes have been replaced. The dirt is back. I can't even believe how much dirt came out of this, what looked like from the surface, a very small hole, but I guess a man was down there, so it was probably really deep. And we couldn't use water for quite a lot of it. So that's a weird feeling. And that's done. But I've had a good week. I'm trying to get a lot of stuff done before it go away. And I think the thing that always happens to me is I imagine I have more time than I do. Also, a thing that happens to me is when I say, I won't take on any new assignments. I inevitably get like things will just come up. You know, people will reach out of the blue and say, hey, do you want to do this? And inevitably they are things that are very fun or interesting, or I'm not in a place where I feel like I can turn things down, so I do them. So that's also happening. So it's going to be like it's going to be a race to the finish line, aka the airport on Saturday morning.
That is where are you going away to?
I'm going to Costa Rica.
Ooh, I did not know this. That is awesome. I'm very excited
for
you.
I thought I told you when I saw you at the game the last time.
Oh, it's possible. I don't know. My brain is goo right now. I have no idea what's happening. But that's very exciting. On the topic of digging, Katie, you mentioned digging dirt in your front yard. Are you a person when you go to a beach? Are you like a dig a hole person? Are you a make a sandcastle type person? Perhaps a large moat that you let the seawater come in and fill in? No.
Not since I was a baby.
Oh, okay. Sometimes I'll dig a hole. I don't know. It's a fun way to spend an afternoon. What am I to say? Digging holes, making castles. I have no problem partaking in that. But Costa Rica, that is a ton of fun. You're gonna do any like adventure like touring? I know they have like zip lines and rainforest tours and stuff like that. Is that on the docket at all?
Doing that kind of stuff? No.
I don't know. I mean, Dylan is like a runner.
I'm not going with Dylan. I'm going with a friend of mine. No, we're just gonna, we rented a little villa with a pool by the beach, and we're just going to chill. We rented an ATV, which is the way people get around there, I've been told. So I'll just be riding an ATV through the jungle. There is a nature preserve that's like a 5-minute drive from where we're staying down at the end of the peninsula, which was the first nature preserve in Costa Rica, which has is a country that has a lot of conservation, which is great. But maybe we'll go there. But there's a lot of snakes and bugs in Costa Rica, so we'll see.
Yeah, that's a fair argument against venturing out into the wilderness. I'm very excited for you. That's a lot of fun. Do you have any good reading materials picked out?
Yeah, I've been just trying to decide. My friend Jenner and I have been discussing what books we're going to bring. If anyone knows, I don't know if you'll find this funny, Sean, but there's people out there maybe who will are familiar with the author Hanya Yangara, who wrote A Little Life, which was like a tome. Her new book is even larger. And my friend was like, I was going to bring it with me. And to give you context, Sean, it probably weighs as much as a suitcase. So I was like, don't bring that. I'm looking for light reads, you know. I've read it before, but I thought maybe I'll bring Sally Rooney's Normal People to reread. Just because it's like a, I don't know, it's like a good kind of breezy, a little bit depressing read. So I guess not that breezy.
Nothing like some light depressiveness on the beach. It's
yeah, I've like a full stack going, and I'll probably just take paperbacks over hardbacks, but I've got a lot of both to read. So this is a good excuse to get through some books.
That is very exciting. I'm very happy for you, and hope your trip is amazing. We're going to now pivot into the podcast part of the show. Yeah. We're talking about basketball. If you sense that maybe I'm trying to come up with as many topics not basketball related as possible to get into the show with, you might be right, because Katie, I'm having a really hard time enjoying this year's postseason now that we're into the second round, which doesn't make a ton of sense on the surface because all of the series are close and compelling and riveting, and the title picture is as murky as it's ever been. But I'm having a hard time, Katie, and I suppose we'll dig into why that is coming up in today's show. We'll talk about what's wrong with the playoffs right now, all the different warring aggressors at play across the league. We're going to get to that in just one second. We've also got the segment we're trying out this week, building off of the idea that everyone's angry at everyone right now. We're going to try to do some conflict resolution, maybe some fun little ways in which that the people who are warring right now within the NBA can get back on the same page and find a newfound trust in one another. That's coming up in just one second. Or I guess that's coming up after the main segment. But either way, the meat of the podcast is on the way, Katie. Let's get to it. All right, it is the thing we're talking about this week. And this week, Katie, we are talking about my, maybe you are sharing these feelings, but this is a subject I wanted to talk about. And that is my disdain for the current state of the NBA playoffs. I'm having a really hard time enjoying the games because I'm finding there's just a lot of shit tied up into all of them. And I don't really know even where to begin here. I don't know if you agree whatsoever. It just feels like it's a very toxic and sour mood around most of these series, despite them being very close. You've got lots of different warring parties between players accusing other players of being dirty. You've got everybody mad at the goddamn refs. You've got fans trying to quote unquote, give unwanted hugs to Chris Paul's family, and the Dallas Mavericks not really doing shit about it. You've got the media getting all in a tizzy. You've got the MVP announcement also kind of adding a whole new level of toxicity to everything else. It feels like no one's really enjoying the playoffs, and the sort of weight of expectation and the desire to win has kind of made it so it's not so fun. I was listening to a recent episode of our friends on Roundball Rock that Keith Parrish, former guest of this podcast, was on, and Keith was talking about how he also hasn't been watching a ton of the playoffs and how he's maybe more of a regular season guy than anything else. And I gotta say, I agree with our boy Keith. I miss the relaxed tone of the regular season, Katie, and I'm not having a ton of fun right now with how things are transpiring in the playoffs, despite them being very compelling and close. And maybe this will change as the conference finals come along and there's just less games and you're not so inundated, but where are you at right now with your sort of state of enjoying the NBA playoffs? Are you at all sort of in the same boat as me where you're just kind of bummed out by the whole enterprise right now?
No, I'm not bummed out.
Okay.
And I'm not, I don't feel particularly stressed out at all. I don't have, you know, a real rooting interest in any of the teams right now that are playing. I certainly have I'd lean toward example, like Miami coming out of the East because, you know, I like a lot of guys on that team. But no, I don't feel stressed. I don't feel like it's been more stressful. I don't feel like it's been more antagonistic on the floor between athletes themselves. I feel like this is the same level of competitiveness that we've seen in past years. I don't feel the animosity there. I will say, I think there's been a lot more animosity from fan bases. Specifically the only way you and I, we should also have the caveat that the only way you and I are digesting that or see that is through Twitter and being online. So this also might be a totally different experience for a regular person who's just watches the games on TV and then turns them off. You know what I mean? Yeah. And kudos to those people because I find myself kind of waffling in and out of, I'm not really going to engage to following or seeing these kind of little fights, micro fights, pop up in my feed and wondering why everybody's kind of lost their minds. I think there's a lot of criticism. Kelly Dwyer mentioned it in his newsletter too, but of the refs, which it's I know the calls are slightly different, this playoffs, this is the first time you're seeing some of the new rules, in the playoffs. So there is going to be an adjustment period. They might not get everything right, and refs don't get everything right a lot of the time anyway. That's just something that comes with the job, you know? So maybe people are really reacting to that a little bit stronger, but it doesn't just feel like that to me. It feels like it's to the point where people can't enjoy the games because they're so hyper focused on either the reffing, you know, or just calls in general, calls that come, calls that don't come, what they think the calls should be. There's a lot of efficiency talk tied up in that too. But all I'm saying for that is what strikes me is, why are you watching the playoffs if you can't? This is the one time that in the season, I don't feel like this. You and I have talked about and seen some pretty stellar regular season games where they've, you know, quote, felt like a playoff game. But for people that don't believe that and don't like the regular season, this is your time. So I don't know why you're complaining, because this is peak basketball, peak competitiveness, theoretically, right? You're seeing it on the floor night after night, aside from, I guess, some of the injuries that have thus far happened too. But why are you complaining about it? You know, if you're not watching the playoffs to enjoy it, to kind of suspend your brain in basketball, in the goo of basketball, the good goo of playoff basketball right now, then again, I don't get why you're watching it, because why do you want to aggravate yourself? It's aggravating enough if you are a fan of one of the teams playing. I get it. Emotions are running particularly high. The other thing I will say about fandom and emotions running high is a lot of fans. I've seen a lot of fans and in I think every fan base at this point overreact to either stuff that happens on the floor. You know, I know we're going to talk about the Ja and Jordan Poole kind of kerfuffle or whatever you want to call it, whether you think that's an accident, whether you don't think that that's an accident. But also I've seen people react strongly to less serious and to me definitely more, they were clearly accidental plays and like basically calling for players to be arrested, thrown in jail, murdered. But then one fan base will say to the other fan base making those calls, how dare you, you seek help, kill yourself, which is really like an interesting parallel. If you can't trace the logic there, I don't know. I can't help. If you're telling someone to kill themselves who you're saying they should kill themselves because they theoretically wish harm on another player and you don't like that, and that's your go-to, that's tough. But I will say that the flip side of that is the fans making those kinds of claims against other fans would themselves be making the same comments if the situation was reversed. And like, this isn't to point fingers or blame anybody, but I'm very confused at like the kind of pearl clutching that's going on to that degree. And I am not like, I do not condone violence. Like I don't, you know, like I have to really, it's stupid. I have to really stress that. But I feel like there is a heightened level. The best way I can call it is like, wimpy outrage in these playoffs, and I don't really get it. Again, that might just be how Sean, the very tiny microcosm that you and I watch basketball, and like I guess a lot of our friends and colleagues in the biz also watch basketball and like kind of digest it and discuss it through these other social channels after the fact. So maybe this is like this is a dumb thing that's just happening to us, and we can easily solve it by not being so engaged in it. But it's, I don't know why it's happening. And I guess as someone who likes to kind of look at the psychology or kind of trends in what's happening, I wonder why it seems to me it's been really heightened. Because I was talking to a couple friends of ours saying like, are you noticing this? Is it like this every year? And first people were like, it's like this every year. But then as every series has kind of gone on, especially this Grizzlies Warriors series, it's been like, no, this feels much worse. This feels much more heightened. I don't really know, because emotions are always high in the playoffs, right? Like, so totally. I don't really get this, like, I'm not trying to be a bro, but like sports are to a degree, not violence, but like sports are about physicality and contact is an inevitable like fallout of that. Well, warranted or unwarranted. And I just like, you see it all the time in the regular season. And I assume you kind of steel yourself against it, even if you don't like seeing it. Nobody likes seeing it. So I don't really get why now it's like, you need to literally, you want to throw somebody in jail because they accidentally like hit someone in the paint when there's about a million arms and elbows flying in every direction, like every second. I don't get it.
Yeah, the thing that has been really bugging me about the playoffs, and like, you know, one of my favorite players was party to this, is Ja Morant. Like, the need to feel like because a bad thing happened to you, that it's obviously someone else's like intention to have made that bad thing happen to you, and not just the happenstance of, like you said, large people doing high speed collisions on a sports field. Like, It that's been really bugging me, because it kind of fuels the anger side of the fan bases, right? Like, we saw it with Pascal Siakam when he elbowed Joel Embiid at the end of game 6, when Joel Embiid was up 30 and shouldn't have been playing with fucking 4 minutes to go, but that's besides the point. But like, that was resolved by Embiid and Siakam on the floor, like minutes after it happened. It also was originally called a foul on Embiid and was reviewed like 2 different times and deemed just a regular offensive foul for Siakam with no intent. And yet still, the whole city of Philadelphia is trying to throw Pascal Siakam in jail and saying that he's a dirty player. And it's just like, a bad thing can happen to your sports team, and it just can just be that sports happened. It doesn't have to be that there was some malicious intent trying to take you down. This also kind of goes to, and maybe this is just my beef with fucking Philly fans, but like their whole thing with, you know, Embiid and the sort of narrative around him and the Sixers and the process being the reason he's not winning the MVP. Like, no, it can just be that Nikola Jokic had a fucking historic season, and it doesn't have to be that Joel Embiid is being, you know, some victim of some sort of collusion by the voters at play here. It's just, they're just, it seems like no one is willing to accept responsibility when things go poorly or when bad luck happens, and to just like shrug your shoulders, and it always has to be somebody's fault. And I don't know if that's like a new phenomenon. I don't know if there's like a weird pent up pandemic anger and aggression from a lot of people that's just kind of coming out on the field of play or when people are talking about these teams. Like, I even did like a very innocuous tweet last week where the Sixers and Heat were playing, and I was like, the Raptors beat both of these teams. Like, very little thought went into it. I just posted it, and fucking like I had to mute the tweet in like 3 minutes because of the freaking freaks who started like yelling at me over it. It's like, we can just have fun and talk about sports. It doesn't have to be that serious. And I think that is kind of extending over to the court itself. And it, like, this whole sort of blaming everybody for being dirty when in fact, you know, shit just happens, that feels like a pretty ugly road to go down, because I don't think anybody's actually trying to hurt somebody else on the floor, unless you're Nikola Jokic pushing Markieff Morris from behind. That maybe that was intentional, who's to say? But for the most part, like, these collisions that take place during fouls or whatever, It's just like, this does not need to be a source of angst. Just accept that a bad thing happened, that an unlucky thing happened. It's not like the world is out to get you. It's just that the world is random and stupid sometimes, and that shit happens. You know, it also, I think, is kind of extending over. The ref talk has been this completely odious, you know, the entire postseason. You know, some people not happy with the number of calls. Some people think there should be more calls. There's never a happy medium. This is a problem that's always existed. I don't think it's going anywhere. I don't think it's new, but it's just, you know, a part of the fabric here. You know, you've got the players sort of interacting with fans in a way that I think they are totally right to be doing so, because fans are fucking lunatics and are doing lots of crazy shit that shouldn't be condoned. It feels like there's lots of different like microaggressors going on in the NBA right now, and it's making it so it's just not terribly fun to consume. I will say, however, the one series that I'm really enjoying, and the one that I am sort of making appointment watching, is the Celtics-Bucks series, because that is the good goo, I think, that you kind of described, right? Like, it's ugly, it's nasty, it's physical, but like everyone seems to have agreed to the terms of play that it's going to be ugly and nasty and physical. And yeah, sure, sometimes Marcus Smart might toe the line, but he hasn't really, I think, done anything all that egregious or anything like that. No one really has. It's just been a nice, nasty, like, all right, we're just going to wail on each other for 7 games type of series, and that's been great. Whereas the contrast is the Sixers Heat thing, where it's just like a constant, well, if Embiid was playing and didn't get elbowed in the face and blah blah blah, and it's like, just shut the fuck up and watch the series. The Grizzlies and Warriors is just like this constant war of words between the players at play. And then you have like the Suns Mavs, which has the fan element involved, and you know, the Scott Foster element involved with Chris Paul. If we're like power ranking the culprits for this sort of toxic general environment we're seeing around the NBA right now, between the fans, the refs, the coaches, and the players, do you have like an order that you would sort of put those groups in as sort of the biggest reason for why things feel so toxic at the moment?
Look, I want to say no, because I think I've seen it equally with like Sixers fans. And then kind of Grizzlies and Warriors fans. Mm-hmm. I get like maybe like I understand that there's like a lot of animosity with Sixers fans because there's like carryover fear and worry about the injuries, and there's a fear, I think, of, well, not fear now, it's like a big, it's a bummer that for fans that Embiid didn't get MVP. For awards, like for MVP awards, I will say like no one is ever happy, you know? I don't know if there's some solace in that.
I don't even know if Jokic is happy that he won. He probably doesn't even know.
Like
yet.
I feel like you can't be. Actually, you know what? Like maybe aside from Embiid, because I know, like I get he's frustrated and he's made some comments, like players usually seem happy for the person who gets the award. Because you also recognize it's one of those things you have to do in your job anyway. If you were in a situation where a colleague got an award and you were a bit like, I saw them slacking off sometimes. You have to be like, congratulations. Like, you have to just be normal. Like, you have to be a normal person in those moments, right? Because you don't know when it could be you. And it's a small league. So that's what I'll say about that. I don't know. I'm sure in terms of toxicity, I bet every person who has like still a team in this would say their team is the least and the team they are currently facing is the most, you know? Yeah. That's why I think this is like really hard to pin down. I guess what I want to know too, aside from ranking, what I want to know is like, what is the alternative that people kind of crying foul would like? Because I guarantee they wouldn't like it if it happened.
Yeah.
Right? And also, like, you have to take players at their word. I get now there is some more personal stuff between the Grizzlies and the Warriors. But for the most part, if guys are like, it's okay, like, this is the spirit of competition. We're fine. Don't worry about us. You have to trust that. That's how they feel. Like, Embiid chose to go out and play with the mask. He's being careful, but like, he understands the risks, right? Like, you know, trust him. And I think that's like, just like another layer, but I always kind of go back to that. It's like, you don't have to advocate so hard for them. They can do it themselves.
Yeah. I guess the other sort of party to all of this, and maybe this is actually the biggest one, because, you know, in this instance, it's probably more than just the little microcosm of Twitter freaks that we've become friends with who are dealing with it. But it's like media stuff, too. Right. And like, not like the good people who are good beat reporters and all that stuff, like that. They do a great job telling the tale of the league. But like the big national shows, the big personalities, the fucking take culture, I feel like the whole sort of need to just denigrate anyone who doesn't win. And you're nothing unless you win a championship, all this bullshit that we've been talking about for a very long time. It feels like it's kind of coalescing to kind of like a breaking point where there's just no black and white in talking about the league anymore. The regular season is pissed. No one cares about it because you don't win the title there. The postseason comes around. If you lose a playoff game, you're garbage. If you win the playoff game, you're amazing. And it just feels like there's never any room for like actual meaningful conversation about things. And I think that shit riles people up. People get so angry about the MVP or Kevin Durant not having the juice or whatever the fuck was being talked about in the first round. Like, it just warps the impression of the league. It sort of, I think, makes it very narrow in terms of like the focus and what's sort of being discussed. I don't know. Maybe the media is kind of the biggest one to blame here. Like, and again, not like the people who actually take the time and do it right, but like the sort of big people who just make millions of dollars to say bullshit on TV. Like, that kind of adds to the whole thing as well. And that stuff's hard to avoid because that seeps into every corner of the coverage and every corner of the conversation. And like, that's the stuff where you'll come across just like your pal who likes the game or whatever. And they watched the NBA today and heard Kendrick Perkins go off about a thing. And then they start parroting that shit back. And it just becomes a very sort of, again, singular, narrow focus on the way the league works. There's no appreciation of cool and good things. It's always about who fucked up. And like that has to, I would assume, inform how the players feel about this stuff too, right? Like, they know what people are saying about them. They don't want to be denigrated on national TV every day. I don't care how much they say they don't. And like, that has to inform like their own sort of intensity when it comes to this stuff and their own sort of view of it being like a very do or die black and white thing. Like, am I just making up a straw man right here, Katie? I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts on the way the sort of media conversation sort of informs all of this sort of just nastiness when it comes to the playoffs?
I think it's cyclical. So I think one sort of feeds into the other necessarily. And like, you know, some of those bigger media people I think you're referring to, are online and like see this kind of stuff. So I imagine, yeah, it influences the things that they're going to say. And they know also what's just going to get reactions. I think that's mostly it. It's like, it comes down to this stuff they're saying is now what gets the biggest reactions. You and I might not agree with that, but we are getting mad. So in a way, did it work? You know what I mean?
Yeah, they got me fucking riled up. Yeah.
I don't really see, or I still see that there's enough of a balance. Like you can choose, it can be annoying, especially if they're on a call for a given game, to listen to certain broadcasters. But like, I don't know. I don't get, I think the last, not last night's game, but Sunday night's Sixers Heat game, I watched out and they had satellite. So they had like the NBA on TNT guys. And like, I don't ever really get to listen to those guys. Right. Like other than in the playoffs. So I'm not annoyed at them. I can be like, it's very interesting to me, actually. Like they are their own weird microcosm removed from time. NBA on TNT. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the way that they talk, the way they talk to each other, the lives I imagine that they live it. They're like in a protected little time capsule. Shaq either looks really sad or angry or like sleepy. Kenny always looks so sad. Ernie sometimes just looks like a bit like he's trying to keep the peace. Chuck, like mostly confused most of the time. I don't mind watching them because I'm like, these guys are caricatures. They understand that. Like they're selling this weird product at this time. So I don't know that like media is on a some type of weird slippery slope. You know, Stephen A. Smith was always screaming about stuff. You know?
Yeah.
You don't have to listen to him.
Yeah, that's fair. Look, it might just be that I am personally stewing in the negativity of the thing too much.
Was there one specific thing that you saw, like from a media, like that, like what's the most recent example?
I mean, the thing that really is bugging me is like this is not playoff related, but it's happening because the playoffs are going on, is like the MVP shit and like the, the just sort of like the digging in the heels, the, like just the inexplicable, it's impossible to look at this season and think Nikola Jokic is the MVP. The analytics argument, come on now, watch the games. It's like, motherfucker, did you watch Nikola Jokic play a single game this season? Like, he's incredible. What the fuck are we doing? We're just lying on national television and like that stuff. And this like goes into like the whole thing with, you know, Kevin Durant. Like he doesn't drive the bus or whatever Charles Barkley was talking about at the beginning. And look, I don't listen to the NBA on TNT for their salient analysis. I listen because it's funny as hell, or I watch because it's funny as hell. But like, it just feels like there's just a very sort of noxious view of the whole league from the people who cover it, from the people who watch it, and it just has made the playoffs less enjoyable to me. Again, outside of that Sixers or that Celtics Bucks series, which for some reason is just saving the day, and I could watch that shit all the time because it's just the best goo you've ever seen. Any parting shots here, Katie, on the what's wrong with the playoffs conversation? My hope is that the second round moves on. Maybe we get a couple of the more toxic fan bases out of the picture and we just get some fun ass basketball to close out the playoffs, and I'll get back in on that. But right now it's a tough slog for me and I'm not having a great time. And I just stop blaming everyone for your injuries. It's shit happens. I don't know. Any parting shots?
I hope it gets better for you.
Mm-hmm.
And try and just enjoy a game. I'm not watching every single game. I'll watch a game when I have a feeling like, I bet this is going to be an interesting game.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
That's usually what I'm doing. And I'm not like, if I'm doing something else that I'm enjoying more, even if that's just like reading a book, talking to someone on the phone, literally nothing else, I'll just do that instead. You could do that too.
You're probably right. And I should say, like, I'm not watching all, like, to your point of don't watch them if you're making your mad. Like, I haven't watched a second of this Sixers Heat series because it's just, I can't do it with the Sixers right now. And I haven't really watched a ton of that Grizzlies Warriors series either because it's just, you know, I've been a real Suns Mavs and a Celtics Bucks boy so far in the second round. And it's kind of all I have the energy for at the moment. But yeah, we'll see when the conference finals come along. Maybe I'll have my sunny disposition restored. But in the meantime, we're going to try to figure out how the conflicts currently going on within the NBA can be solved by some, you know, camaraderie, trust building, like trust falls, like variations on that. We're going to come up in the next segment with some conflict resolution for those who are warring within the NBA. That's all coming up in just 1 second. Yeah. And we have reached the segment we're trying out this week, a segment that Katie has called New Trust Falls in the rundown, which I think is a great way to frame it. Essentially, we are going to try to establish ways in which the current warring factions within the NBA can reach some sort of resolution, some kind of peace, so they're not so angry all the time, and maybe restore some joy to the NBA postseason for my personal interest. Katie, let's begin, shall we, with just the sort of two teams that I think have been kind of jawing at each other, no pun intended, the most so far, and that is the Warriors and the Grizzlies. This series was pretty fun till Ja Morant got hurt. Ja Morant got hurt in game three of the series. Kind of a weird sort of confluence of events. It seemed like he hurt himself on a closeout, and then a couple plays later, Jordan Poole looked like he was going for a steal, accidentally grabbed Ja's knee. Maybe there was a little tugging action. I don't really know. I don't want to get into the Zapruder film of that, but the back and forth between Ja suggesting that Jordan Poole broke the code, the suggestion that Dylan Brooks broke the code when he also hurt Gary Payton II and sent him out for the next few weeks with a broken elbow, which sounds like a miserable injury. It just seems like those two teams, it's nice to have a brewing rivalry. It seems like they have misplaced anger over their injuries that we've kind of just talked about in the last segment. Katie, is there a way that we can get these code-breaking dudes on both Memphis and Golden State feeling happy, get them back on the same page, and maybe restore some friendly competitive fire between the two?
The only thing I can think of, just because, like, on the theme of codes and, like, things, activities where there are often codes or puzzles or things to solve, is to put them in an escape room together.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Have you done an escape room before,
no,
Katie?
No, and I never will.
Yeah, I've done one before. It was fun. It wasn't like a... like a scary version or anything like that. Like it seemed pretty low stakes. And like, it was a pretty quick thing to get out of. However, like I do like the idea of putting them into like a horror escape room where there's like maybe some, you're feeling the pressure to get out because your life might be on the line. Obviously it's all staged, but that might be what they need to kind of solve these differences. You get Steve Kerr and Taylor Jenkins reading out the instructions to everybody. You get Ja Morant and Jordan Poole going through a code book, looking for a certain letter in a book or something like that to put together your escape code. I like that a lot. I was also going to go the same way. I've been playing this game online with my friends during the pandemic called Codenames. Have you played Codenames before, Katie?
I haven't.
So it's a cooperative game where essentially there's a full board of words. And what your job is as the code, or I guess, what is it? The code spy master, is you are trying to give words by association that are not on the board, but are tied to the words on the board. You have a certain number that you have. You have the other team has a certain number that they're looking to get. Sometimes they overlap. And then there's like black squares where you will die if you get that one, if you guess that one. So you have to like be careful with the type of word you give as your code word that connects to the words that you're trying to get your team to guess. It's a very collaborative game. There's a lot of teamwork. There's a lot of debate and argument, but it's productive debate and argument. And I would argue that if you just sort of mishmash the teams, it's not Warriors against Grizzlies or anything like that. You just sort of do a hodgepodge and do like a, you know, a mix of half Warriors and half Grizzlies on each team, and they go at one another. I think that could be a pretty, trust reinducing game for them to play. That was a weird phrase. Either way, Codenames, that would be my answer. I think we are on the same lines though there. These guys got to get back to playing with the right code, baby. All right. The next sort of, Chris Paul has a couple of beefs to go through here. Let's go the first with the shithead Dallas fan who was trying to quote unquote give unwanted hugs to his mother, I believe, on Mother's Day. Weird shit, weird behavior from did you see the video of this like YouTube ass looking child who was trying to do this shit to Chris Paul's mom?
I saw the video of him getting taken out, and from what I understand, he's like heir to the like bottling fortune of 7-Up or something in Dallas. It's like a very rich Dallas family, which checks out because I was like, yeah, this is just like a teenager who's never been told no in his life.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Seemed like a real shithead. Good thing the Mavs responded as such with a very stern ban of he's not allowed back until 2023, which will probably encompass roughly 22 games or something like that for the Mavs at home. So not exactly a stern punishment for the shithead heir to 7-Up. But in addition, Chris Paul has had some beef with Scott Foster basically in every playoffs he's ever existed in. And I believe Scott Foster was the official for one of the games Chris Paul fouled out in against the Mavs as well. Maybe this is two separate exercises. Maybe we can throw the 7-Up teen Scott Foster and Chris Paul into the same room to try to figure out their differences. But where do you want to start here, Katie? Do you want to do all three in one to see if, you know, like the ref probably doesn't need to do anything to do with the 7-Up teen, but the ref, Scott Foster, did have a thing where he didn't know who Jack Harlow was earlier this week, and then the NBA Refs Association made a stupid video about it. So maybe the 7-Up team is the stand-in for Jack Harlow in this situation. And maybe there's a way to sort of cross those bridges.
Honestly, I didn't know who Jack Harlow was like till very recently either.
Only reason I know him now is because he was at a Celtics game and he was toying with like the dials on the back of the camera operator's camera, which is fucking bullshit. Eat shit, Jack Harlow. Anyway, 7-Up teen, Scott Foster, Chris Paul, stick him in a room. What are we doing to, you know, get some sort of accord between these three?
I guess I don't really know because I don't think Chris Paul, well, one, I don't think you can have any accord with the teenager. I think that teenager should go through like, I don't know, like schools and like weird camps for rich teens never work, you know, like they just come out worse, you know, like, so I'm not trying to advocate, like send this kid to like military academy or something.
Sure.
Yeah. Maybe he should just go through some exercises where he's told no in various degrees and various capacities, and he's got to see how he deals with that. Maybe it can be Chris Paul is the one who's like telling him that. Maybe Chris Paul can hit some kind of buzzer. Maybe it can be like a Pavlovian type experiment. He goes to grab something and Chris Paul electrocutes him gently with a little buzzer. Who are the other people?
Scott Foster and Chris Paul was the other duo we're trying to fix. Okay. Let me first offer thoughts on the teen before we move to the ref Chris Paul thing. I don't think this teen deserves any sort of reconciliation. I think instead, as a rich son of a pop fortune, I think he should be knocked down a peg. And so we're going to bring back the subject of last week's episode. I think Chris Paul needs to get JaVale McGee and this teen in a room, and JaVale McGee just gets to dunk on this kid like 10, 15 times just to really like humble him, make him realize he's insignificant and puny and shitty. And that is probably all you need to really get that kid scared straight. Whereas with Scott Foster and Chris Paul, it might be a little bit more difficult. This has been a long-standing beef. I think at one point, Chris Paul was like 0-18 in games officiated by Scott Foster in the playoffs, which seems a little dubious. But do you have a thought on how to bridge the gap between Chris Paul and his least favorite ref?
Unfortunately, I don't, because I think those things, they just live forever or until one or the other person retires, you know?
Yeah, it seems like it's too far gone at this point. I don't think any sort of team building exercise. I don't think, you know, having them work together to, you know, canoe a boat across a lake or something like that and set up a camp, I don't think that's going to really build their teamwork or chemistry. This one might be a bit of a lost cause, which is a problem. But hey, Scott Foster kind of has it coming because that guy seems like a real dickhole. we're going to continue on here. Let's go to the other sort of angsty beef going on right now, which is between the entire city of Philadelphia and the NBA voters / Nikola Jokic. Is there a way to make Sixers fans less angry about the MVP shit? Or is this one also kind of a lost cause, a la Scott Foster? How can we bridge the gap here, Katie?
Little bit of a lost cause, just because I think Philly fans will be kind of upset either until they win. But then I think if they win, they will hold that over because it's like I guess then Embiid could win finals MVP. So maybe that's Nice.
The award that's for the playoffs and not the regular season, like the MVP award is. Like, people seem to forget all the fucking time.
I mean, I guess for me, it's like, don't you just watch, maybe just watch Jokic? Like, it just maybe have like immersion therapy. And not even just in the regular season. Let's get some footage of him racing his horses in the off season. Very soothing for even like a grieved Sixers fan. I think that could be nice. Yeah, like immersion therapy in a very comfortable space. The food they like on hand, you know, like temperature controlled, maybe like a massage chair. It's going to be really expensive to put every Sixers fan through this process. Maybe the only process that will work, TBD. But I think it'll be worth the money.
Yeah, I don't know how your soul can't be soothed by watching Nikola Jokic.
I don't know who's paying for it. Yeah. Also, I'm
Josh
not
Harris
sure.
Can pay for it. He's a rich ghoul, right? I like the immersion therapy quite a bit. You know how, Katie, how sometimes when a team is in the playoffs and they're on the road, they'll open up their arena and like have people mm-hmm. watch the game in the arena to kind of, you know, recapture the sort of vibes. I wonder if maybe that's the solution here. You just throw up any Jokic game or just like a full smash cut of Jokic's best highlights from the season. You get Joel Embiid in there as the MC, and then you just, for 20,000 Sixers fans, play that Jokic smash cut. That does seem pretty soothing and calming. You know, they might start throwing tomatoes at the screen or something. They might get real Philly about it. I don't know. But I agree. If you haven't watched Nikola Jokic, which to me, it seems like no one in the entire city of Philadelphia has done this season, I recommend doing so. And then you'll realize, oh yeah, this guy's fucking amazing. He should be the MVP. It's no problem. Very good answer by you, Katie. Let's do one more, shall we? There's not really that many other huge beefs going on. I suppose the Celtics and Bucks, again, it's kind of the terms have been set in their beef and they're all happy and okay with the terms and they're not really upset about anything. But you know, is there a beef there that we can solve? Is there like a quorum that can be reached between those two teams to like elbow each other less? Or is it something where you're like, maybe the trust is being built because they're wailing on each other so competitively?
Actually, no, I think like this one is pretty fine.
Yeah.
You know,
I truthfully think, Katie, that if they were to do an impromptu trust fall line or whatever, like that's a thing, right? In the middle of one of these games, I think the Celtics guys would catch the Bucks guys and vice versa. I think it's like a real recognized real type of series over there. Everything should be Celtics Bucks is what I'm realizing. the best goo there is, to bring it all back full circle. Katie, we're going to round it out there. Thank you very much for indulging me in this little exercise. It's just been my grievances on today's show, and I appreciate you putting up with them. Let's go now to our posters of the week, the way we close out every single episode of the podcast, the best in NBA social media from the last 7 days. My poster of the week is Kevin Durant, who's been just killing it this week, totally living rent-free in people's heads. His tweet, it's like, I enjoy doing nothing, but when I'm tired of doing nothing, I gotta do something. This is my fight. I've never related to a tweet more. Kevin Durant, summing up my feelings coming out of the pandemic and sort of straddling the line between boredom and busyness and going from 0 to 100. I appreciate that post from Kevin Durant, much like I've appreciated all of his posts this last week where he's, you know, calling out people for being little and stupid. And he's been fantastic. Katie, who's your poster of the week?
Mine is Miles Bridges, who was, I guess, in an airport recently traveling somewhere, and he was really mesmerized by a little sparrow that got in the airport, and he took a lot of videos of it hopping around on the carpet between chairs in the like airport waiting area.
Excellent. Love it. The vacations have begun, Katie. Do you have anyone documenting Katie's vacation watch when you go to Costa Rica?
I mean, my friend will probably take pictures of me, but frankly, Sean, right, that's private.
Fair enough. Hope you enjoy yourself. Hope it's a great time. And we will round it out there. Thank you, as always, for tuning in and supporting the show. Katie, anything in particular you'd like to plug? You said you have lots of projects on the go. People are expecting some plugs now.
I guess they are, huh? Well, because I think they just announced this, but I have a story. I have a feature in the new issue of Flagrant magazine, and that launches at the end of this month, May 28th. They're having a launch party in New York, and you can presumably get the magazine after that if you'd like to read my story. And everything else, no, I won't talk about it yet.
All right. Sounds good. You can find me at Woodley Sean. You can listen to Locked On Raptors every single day. You can also watch it on YouTube every day if you want to see my mug. Katie was on Tuesday's episode. We talked about OG Anunoby if you want to go and peruse that. And with that, we will round it out. A huge thank you to producer Greg for making us sound so great on the ones and twos. We will talk to you again next week with another episode of Basketball. Bye-bye.